We live in a fast-paced and hectic world where it's easy to feel overwhelmed, stressed, and out of control. How do you manage all the competing pressures without losing sense of yourself? How do you stay focused enough to not only plot a path, but follow it? Welcome to Master Your Life, a show that offers inspiration, insight, and intelligence, as well as success stories from many walks of life that can show you how you can control your own destiny. Our knowledgeable and entertaining host and her guests give practical advice that you can use every day in the quest to master your life. Now, here's your host, Leah Mattinson.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Master Your Life, the show of insight, intelligence, and inspiration to live a better life. I'm host Leah Mattinson. It's my absolute pleasure to welcome back to the show Dr. William Mackus. Dr. Mackus was born in Czechoslovakia. He emigrated to Canada with his parents in 1989 through a refugee camp in Yugoslavia. He grew up in Toronto and obtained a four-year undergrad degree in immunology at the University of Toronto. He then obtained his medical degree at McGill University in Montreal and a five-year medical specialization in nuclear medicine, radiology, and oncology. Dr. Mackus worked for AHS, that's the Alberta Health Services, for those who are listening internationally, at the Cross Cancer Institute as the lead PET CT radiologist for the province of Alberta and head of the Medical Isotope Cancer Treatment Program. William is also an assistant professor in the Department of Radiology at the University of Alberta and the author of over 100 peer-reviewed publications in international medical journals. You can find Dr. Mackus's work at mackusmd.substack.com. So Dr. Mackus, so thank you so much for coming back to the show today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So when I first had Dr. Mackus on was several months ago, and what brought his message to my mind and to have him on the show was he was talking about doctor deaths in Canada. At that time, there had been 83. So maybe we could kind of pick up there on what's going on with the doctor population. And you were trying to really get the Alberta Health Services and the medical industry in Canada to stop forcing doctors to get vaccinated in order to do their job because the rate of death was so high. So let's pick up there and then we'll talk about other things that are coming out as a result of your research.
Sure thing. I've been tracking Canadian physician sudden deaths for about a year and a half now, and they just continue to rise. By the latest count, it's 132 Canadian doctors have died suddenly or unexpectedly since the rollout of the COVID vaccines at the start of 2021. We've put together a very large database of Canadian physician deaths, all Canadian physician deaths spanning the last 4 years, 2019 to 2022, so we could actually compare and see how physician mortality rates compared to pre-pandemic years. And I can tell you in 2020, it was about a 20% rise. In 2021, there was a 37% rise in mortality. So that's now the vaccines have been rolled out. So you would actually expect mortality to go down. Instead, it doubled. And then this past year, 2022, physician mortality is up 53%. Compared to 2019. Now that's significant. That's, you know, that's about 200 something extra doctors have died this year compared to 2019. So most Canadian doctors have had four or five COVID-19 vaccines. And this really shocks people when I tell them that, because, you know, people sort of remember the vaccine mandates required two vaccines. And, you know, some people needed the booster shot as well. But the fact that according to Health Canada rules, as a doctor, you now have to have four or five jabs to be considered fully vaccinated. And in a couple of months, it's going to be six jabs because you have to take these vaccines every 6 months to be considered up to date on your vaccines. This is from Health Canada. So most people are shocked when they hear that, the idea that, you know, people are walking around with five COVID-19 vaccines when we know that even one COVID vaccine is sometimes sufficient to cause permanent disability or death.
Right. So there's two things we can talk about there. One is kind of the context for people around the doctor deaths, because they're the canary in the coal mines.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one thing of what their experience. These aren't doctors that are old. So for those of you who are, this is the first time you're kind of hearing this stuff, because it's not reported in mainstream news, these doctor deaths, and it certainly isn't linked to the COVID jab. Is it, Dr. Mackus?
Well, that's the thing, is that that's the only common factor is the COVID-19 vaccine. These doctors, when I look at the sudden and unexpected deaths, I'm specifically looking at doctors 25 to 70 years old who are actively practicing medicine. So these are not doctors who retired a long time ago. These are not doctors who've been struggling with chronic illnesses or, you know, cancer for many, many years. These are doctors who are healthy, actively practicing doctors who were subjected to COVID-19 vaccine mandates, had to have at least two or three shots minimum. Because in Canada, we still have COVID-19 vaccine mandates in order to be able to practice medicine. In fact, Alberta was the only province that backtracked on their COVID-19 vaccine mandate. However, so they allowed a few doctors to return to work who didn't want to be COVID-19 vaccinated. But you can count those doctors on two hands. And we have 11,000 doctors in Alberta. So this is a tiny group. But if you want a new job in Alberta as a doctor with Alberta Health Services, they still require you to be fully up to date on your COVID-19 vaccines. So we have these mandates across Canada. So right now you cannot practice as a physician. You cannot get a new job as a physician unless you're fully vaccinated. And you know that we have a shortage of doctors, of healthcare workers, of nurses all across Canada. And what the politicians are doing is they're saying, okay, we're going to open up the country to international doctors and nurses, but they have to be fully COVID vaccinated. So they have to have, you know, the same jabs that our doctors are being forced to have here. And with a 53% increased mortality for physicians this past year alone, I think this is absolutely reprehensible that we are still mandating doctors to get these COVID-19 vaccines.
Yeah, it is absolutely reprehensible. And their College of Physicians and Surgeons, like, they see what's going on and they're not doing anything to stand up for their membership. Like, it is absolutely insane. So what is the rationale for doing that? But
I'll give you a very interesting thing. I actually received the Canadian Medical Association journal in my mailbox. I still get it. And so this is the Association for All Doctors in Canada. And I've written them three letters informing them that Canadian doctors are dying in record numbers. They're dying in their sleep. They're dying while exercising. And they've ignored my letters and they've gone online and they said, this is misinformation or disinformation. We will not look into this. There's no evidence that vaccines are harming any physician. And so I looked at my Canadian Medical Association journal, the April 2023 issue, and I flip it to the backside, and there's a full page advertisement for Pfizer. Like the full page, the outside cover. And this is the association that is supposed to be looking out for the health and safety of Canadian physicians. In fact, if I may, I want to actually show you the magazine and the Pfizer advertisement in the journal there.
Yes, please do. Please do. Because I think people are so appalled or shocked and appalled by it.
So this is the Canadian Medical Association journal that, you know, doctors receive every month. And here is the something called Pfizer Flex. Count on Pfizer's commitment to patients with Pfizer Flex. And here you see sponsored, you know, by
Pfizer. Yeah.
This is the back cover of the Canadian Medical Association journal, right? And so then we wonder why they're ignoring the deaths of their own members. They will sell out to a pharmaceutical company to get ads, which, of course, they get paid to host these ads. Mm-hmm. And they will ignore the fact that their own physician members are dying in record numbers just to have an ad from Pfizer. It's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, it is disgusting. And it should be criminal. It is disgusting and it should be criminal. It's like there's no conscience in our society anymore, consciousness. So the whole Hippocratic Oath has gone right out the window.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, we've lost more than just the Hippocratic Oath. We've really lost all the medical ethics that were established after World War II. And I know people don't like bringing up the Nuremberg Code, for example, where, you know, there were codes put in place to prevent, you know, experimentation on human beings that was conducted in Germany by German doctors. You know, the Nuremberg codes are there to make sure that that kind of unethical conduct by doctors never happens again. And, you know, so since World War II, we've had, you know, very strong established medical ethics in the Western world. And, you know, bodily autonomy, informed consent, the sanctity of the patient-physician relationship, where a government body is not supposed to interfere in the relationship that a doctor has with their patient. And now we have these bureaucrats that are beholden to pharmaceutical companies and politicians who are telling doctors what they can or cannot do with their patient, which medications they can or can't use, even though these are approved medications, they're perfectly safe. You know, so we've lost all types of, you know, medical ethics that you can imagine. And it's just been an absolute travesty to watch that happen.
Mm-hmm. Because the consequence of the loss of medical ethics, because people really do look to their doctors as if they're God, they're going to help to cure them of things, fix them of things, you know, ask the doctor. And now, not for just this last 3 years, but for many years, the pharmaceutical companies have had huge influence on practices of physicians. So what are some of the outcomes, though, Dr. Makis, of this most recent assault on the human being as a result of the one jab, which you talked about? It doesn't need to be two or three or four or five jabs and boosters. It can be just one, because you've been very intent on doing deep research. You have a big team of people that help you to collate all this data that's coming out. So share with the audience just sort of some of the information that you've gathered as a result of one shot, and maybe even how that, I remember recently attending a presentation that you had held where you talked about the difference between the first shot and the last shot, just the number of people that were having very severe adverse reactions. But let's start with the first shot, maybe.
Well, you know, I mean, there's two things to look at when looking at the reactions to the COVID-19 vaccines. One is deaths, and that you can look at through excess deaths. And the other one is, of course, injuries and disabilities. So if we look at just the excess deaths alone, if you look at every highly mRNA vaccinated country in the world, each of these countries is seeing skyrocketing excess mortality since the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccines. And this excess mortality this in the past year is on the order of 1 in 1,000 people died since the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccines as an unexplained death that really isn't explained by anything else. And this is excess mortality beyond historical trends going back for the past 5 years. So in the United States, for example, we have close to 300,000 excess deaths last year. And that's about 1 in 1,000 Americans died. And I'm going to say probably as a result of the COVID-19 vaccines. In Canada, you know, it's hard to get the data in Canada because the government is actually holding back on releasing those statistics. But we know in Alberta, for example, that over 10,000 excess Albertans died since the start of the pandemic. And it's heavily skewed in the last 2 years. In 2021, the number one cause of death in Alberta was cause unknown. And this was 3,400 Albertans. And this past year, it's going to be somewhere between 4,000 and 6,000 Albertans. You know, we have a population of 4.6 million. So again, you see 1 in 1,000 Albertans died probably due to the vaccine. And you see this in the UK with their excess deaths, in Australia, you know, Japan, Germany. Japan has the highest excess death rate since World War II. And they have administered 380 million mRNA vaccines to their population. This is just Pfizer and Moderna. And they had over 90,000 excess deaths last year, the highest since World War II. So, and Edward Dodd, who's a BlackRock hedge fund manager in the United States, who's been analyzing insurance data, he's seeing this excess mortality, and he's seeing it specifically in the working age population. So this is the population that was subjected to COVID-19 vaccine mandates. And he basically says, you know, if anyone has any evidence that these excess deaths are being caused by anything else, please come forward, because the only evidence that he sees is the COVID-19 vaccines and the mandates, the actually forcing people, working age people, to be vaccinated or lose their jobs. And that's where he's seeing the huge difference. So 1 in 1,000 excess deaths last year almost certainly due to the COVID-19 vaccine. Now, autopsies are not being done. And if they are being done, they're not being done properly because the staining for the spike protein is not being done. So pathologists are actually not looking for damage done by the spike protein from the COVID-19 vaccine. And if you don't look for something, you're not going to find it. Right.
So are they not looking intentionally, or are they not looking because they don't normally look?
So it's I'm going to say intentionally, because as a pathologist, you know, it is your duty, mm-hmm. you know, to perform an autopsy to the best of your ability, your skills, and to the best that, you know, technology available. Right. Now, there is technology available, immunohistochemical staining for the spike protein, where they could order, you know, these stains, perform the autopsy properly, and find, you know, whether the spike protein was in the tissues like the heart, like the brain, and, you know, whether it caused the damage and led to a sudden death. And they're not doing it. But, and they could. They have the skills, they have the ability, and they have the resources. This is not a question of money. These stains are not expensive. They're not doing it. Now, you could argue, what are the reasons why they're not doing it? You know, some of them may have been told by, you know, the chief medical examiners not to perform these types of autopsies. They may have been threatened by the colleges, you know, who may have said, okay, if you perform this kind of autopsy, you link anything to the vaccine, you're going to lose your medical license. So there's a lot of threats behind the scenes that are, right. you know, preventing. And then some pathologists may take it upon themselves to say, well, I don't want to look for the cause. I'd rather put cause unknown and, you know, not risk my career, not risk my medical license. And I don't care why this patient died. It's, you know, and I've heard this said a lot, you know, it's either my career or their life. And when you have that decision, a lot of doctors are choosing their career mm-hmm. over their patients' lives. And that's a tragedy, but that's where we're at in Canada and the United States as well. So that's the deaths. And really, you know, they could do the autopsies properly if they wanted to. They don't want to. When you look at the injuries and disabilities, this again is something that's being covered up, by the media, by the health authorities. For example, I was looking at, you know, kids who are coming down with severe influenza in this latest respiratory outbreak, and kids were coming down and they were dying in record numbers. You know, we had more influenza deaths in healthy children than at any other time in history. And the provincial governments were deliberately refusing to release any information to parents, any information to the public. For example, the Ontario provincial government of Doug Ford completely refused to release any information about pediatric influenza deaths. Alberta and BC released, they said, you know, X number of kids died, but we're not telling you their ages, we're not telling you their vaccine status, nothing. So there's a deliberate cover-up of injuries and deaths. And again, when you look at how many people are being disabled, for example, by the vaccine, it's something on the order of about 1 in 100 vaccinated people are being permanently disabled by the vaccines. And again, that information is coming from insurance data. Edward Dodd looked at this again. He was on Steve Bannon's War Room show, and he was giving numbers. He said, okay, I have seen 1.7 million excess disability applications in the United States, in the working age population. This is the population that was mandated to take COVID-19 vaccines. And he said, literally, from the data that he has seen and reported on and written about, he's written a book as well. Mm-hmm. He basically said that the working age population of United States had been poisoned. And I think that's a very powerful statement and a very, you know, very powerful way to summarize what has happened as a result of the COVID-19 vaccine mandates.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Yes, and I had Ed Dowd on the show probably about 2 months ago, talking about what he had researched to that point. So thank you for bringing up him again. One of the things that you've done, Dr. Macus, is just really prolifically researched and written also about all of these injuries. So everything from young athletes to pregnant moms who are, you know, dying and the baby dies in them, you know, so there's some really big, like horrific things that aren't just, it's not just old people dying of influenza. It's these young children that are actually dying from things that are like really unheard of. I have 6 grandchildren, just to put it into some context, and I have not ever seen, I've been involved in healthcare of one form or another my whole life. And so watching this just with disbelief and like shock and awe at the number of kids that are affected by this, all the way like up to age 19, that, you know, parents either line them up unknowingly or they were bribed into getting these vaccines. And now people are embarrassed and ashamed to say, even to bring up that they've got an injury because they feel bad that they actually subjugated their kids to this stuff. But we've got to get to a point where we're saying these things out loud, that we've done this, because that's the only way that we can actually try to heal some of this stuff. Like it's too late once they're on the embalming table to do anything. So maybe just because we're about halfway through the show, just, is there help for people who have actually taken these jabs? Is there hope for people to be able to do some things to take back their health, to get rid of the clotting or neurological damage? Can you maybe just speak a little bit to that? And then we'll go back into some of the stories again.
Sure. No, there absolutely is. And, you know, there are, now we can't, there's no perfect way to clear the spike protein out of your system. Mm-hmm. And no one has really been found a way to completely sort of reverse the situation. At least we don't know yet if it's possible to do that or not. But there's a lot of things you can take to either break down the spike protein itself, or block it from doing harm in the body tissues in general. And we know, first thing I want to say is that the spike protein gets into the blood
everywhere,
and it travels all over the body. The mRNA is found in the blood for several weeks, and it circulates. It just circulates, and because the lipid nanoparticles, you know, they're very lipid soluble, so they can just enter cells anywhere in the body, anywhere the blood delivers them to. The mRNA will get delivered. So we know that mRNA is being delivered to the heart. It's being delivered to the kidneys, to the liver, to the testes, ovaries, brain.
Yeah. And the reason I bring up brain is because I'm pointing at my head. For those of you who are just listening in, come and watch us on masteryourlife.ca. So you can watch that, or the Rumble channel, masteryourlife.ca. Because this won't be able to be played on YouTube, I'm sure, without getting another strike. So, so the head, though, this blood-brain barrier that people have said, you know, that's one way that the brain is protected. But with this particular thing, it doesn't seem like that's the case. So I just wanted to point it out, because lots of people who listen to the show have neurological diseases, neurological issues. And so is this actually crossing that blood-brain barrier?
Absolutely. I've actually put out a Substack this morning. I was writing it up yesterday, most of the day yesterday. There was a new German study that had just come out, and they had done extensive research on, you know, whether the spike protein can cross the blood-brain barrier. Where does it show up in the brain? You know, how does it localize in the brain? And what they found was that, yes, it can absolutely. The spike protein actually stimulates production of proteins that break down the blood-brain barrier. And so it can get easily into the brain. It gets into the bone marrow of the skull. It gets into the meninges. And then it gets into the brain parenchyma. And from all the viral proteins, only the spike protein gets into the brain parenchyma itself. There, it causes all kinds of inflammation. So that really is responsible for a lot of the neurological side effects and injuries we see from the vaccines. But it also affects coagulation cascades and pathways, so that you get these microclots and you get these microbleeds in the brain. And that's another thing that, you know, it's good to have proof of that right now. When you get these little clots in the brain or bleeds, again, you can get all kinds of damage and side effects and symptoms from that, whether it's all the paralyses, you know, vision problems, hearing problems, you know, people having seizures, people having mental health changes. So yeah, absolutely. There's a huge impact of the spike protein on the brain. Now going back to the what people can take. So there's two ways to look at it. You can look at it as you just want to break down and block the spike protein and wherever it is in the body. And so natokinase, which is an enzyme derived from fermented soybeans and available as a supplement on Amazon, it was developed in Japan. It's, you know, not that expensive. It's about $25 a bottle or so. Natokinase breaks down the spike protein, but it also breaks down blood clots and amyloid blood clots. That's those weird white grayish looking long rubbery clots that we've seen in that movie Died Suddenly, for example, that the embalmers are seeing. Yes. So it actually breaks down those clots as well. So if people are concerned about clots, they can take natokinase. If people are worried about inflammation of the heart, they can take taurine, which is a supplement that actually reduces heart inflammation. They use it a lot in Japan. The Japanese eat it in their diet. It's in seafood. It's in, you know, squid, octopus, fish. And in Japan, the ischemic heart disease is very low. And they have, because they eat a lot of taurine in their diet. So taurine, that's T-A-U-R-I-N-E. That's something that athletes or young people can take if they're worried about myocarditis or sudden cardiac death. NAC, N-acetylcysteine is, again, a supplement and an amino acid. It's a very powerful antioxidant, and it also binds the spike protein. It doesn't break it down, but it binds it, and it mops up all the free radicals and all the oxygen reactive species that the spike protein creates and damages the tissues, right? So we'll get kidney damage or liver damage, lung damage, brain damage. The NAC will reduce all of that inflammation and will sort of mop up those free radicals that are causing damage. Things like quercetin binds and alters the spike protein. Bromelain, which is found in pineapples, but you can get it as a supplement. Olive leaf extract, very powerful for spike protein damage. Dandelion leaf or root. I believe the wellness company actually combines natokinase and dandelion root, those two anti-spike protein elements in their supplement line. White pine needle tea for people who like herbs and who like to drink tea. That has anti-spike protein properties. And of course, strengthening your immune system with vitamin D, vitamin C, magnesium, zinc, melatonin. These are supplements that you can take to strengthen your immune system overall and, again, mitigate some of the damage that's being done by the spike protein. So there are a lot of things that people can take, but people have to be proactive with their health, especially vaccinated people. They can't, you know, they can't just wait and see, you know, if they have side effects or, you know, because sometimes the damage, you know, by the time it shows up, it's very severe. You know, sometimes it only shows up as a heart attack. And even some of the cases of sudden cardiac death, the person had no symptoms before they died suddenly in their sleep. So vaccinated individuals, whether you've had one vaccine or whether you've had five, have to be very proactive with their own health, because the doctors are not going to help you. If you're vaccine injured, doctors are not going to help you. Yeah.
You are on your own. So get after that list of make a list and get and go shopping for that stuff and get outside to get your vitamin D from the sun. Yeah. You know, so there's lots of supplements that people can take, but also use Mother Nature to get outside and soak up some of that of the vitamin D that's available.
And I'll give you even a simpler solution, fasting. Fasting or intermittent fasting, which is free. And that stimulates, you know, sort of the body's processes to clear damaged cells that have the spike protein and kill them and remove them from the system. So some people actually have significant improvement in certain symptoms, but just by doing 1 or 2 day fasts, or, you know, you could look into intermittent fasting, whichever way you want to do it. Fasting seems to be really helpful for some of these symptoms as well.
I had another guest on the show the Phoenix Protocol is his protocol, and it's dry fasting. So you can check that out as well. I'm in one of the previous episodes. So just type in dry fasting, or again, come to the website and look him up. So it's just interesting ways to recover the body very, very quickly. So thank you for that, Dr. Mackus. And so let's talk about, just to pick up on why people are not symptomatic. because again, it's like people are not really attached to their body. So they don't notice until things really are obvious and awful. But one of the, probably 3 months ago or so, somebody sent me a screenshot of a person who had had some sort of a scan where you could actually see the blood clots that were in their body all over the place. But the person actually reported that they were feeling relatively okay. So have you seen sort of evidence of that kind of those kinds of tests or scans, and that there's this underlying condition or health problems that people might be completely unconscious of?
It's interesting. I know that there are sort of diagnostic modalities being developed in the United States right now that could be, you know, maybe either scanning for evidence of myocarditis or blood clots. We don't have that in Canada. But definitely, because if you think about it, you know, young people, let's say young, healthy, relatively healthy people have a pretty large capacity for, for their body to handle damage, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, that may explain why some people are simply not having any symptoms, because the body has a tremendous capacity to absorb damage. Now, of course, if you push the body too far and you don't listen to the body at all, sometimes the symptoms are very subtle. You know, they're very subtle, and people might just blow them off, say, oh, you know, I had a little bit of something, you know, it's probably a rib pain or you know, it's nothing. And people are not, like you said, people are not paying attention to their bodies often, mm-hmm. right? And so if there's subtle symptoms, they might just miss them or blow them off. And so the damage continues to accumulate. Right. You know, if it's the blood clots and you've got, you know, little blood clots circulating in your system, well, those blood clots are getting lodged in your tissues. You know, they might be causing tiny infarcts in your liver or in your brain or even in the heart. But, you know, if you're a healthy young individual, you know, you may not notice those little infarcts. Right. And so the damage continues mm-hmm. to accumulate. And, you know, one of the tragedies of this situation is that because doctors have ignored vaccine injuries and have denied them, because mm-hmm. that puts them at a legal liability, and now they've injured potentially 1,000 patients, and they are legally liable because the doctors should have known better, right? There's no excuse at this point. Even by sort of mid-2021, doctors should have known that athletes were dying on the field left and right, that people were having horrific side effects. I mean, it was all over social media. Yes. I mean, yes, you know, many of us were banned for speaking up about it, but there were, you know, thousands and thousands of reports, people reporting their injuries on social media. Now, when I go back on Twitter and I do research, I see all of these posts back in 2021. Mm-hmm. So doctors should have known, but they've been ignoring the injuries. And so now, you know, we're at a point where doctors are simply refusing to look. You know, they don't want to acknowledge any of these injuries that are happening. So they're not doing the tests, and they're letting their patients continue to accumulate damage. People continue taking booster shots. If you trusted the government and you trusted the politicians and you kept taking booster shots every 6 months, imagine the damage is cumulative, right? So each batch is different. So you might have gotten lucky with one or two batches where the mRNA was degraded, or there was saline or something else in the vial that you didn't actually get the damaging spike protein. But you can only get lucky so many times, right? This is sort of a Russian roulette scenario where, you know, you might get lucky once or twice, maybe even three times, but sooner or later, you're going to hit a bad batch. You're going to get a high dose of mRNA, high dose of spike protein, and you're going to get one of these batches that are causing fatalities or severe injuries at a very high rate. And we know those batches are out there and circulating in the population. Pardon me. So, you know, it's just been a tragedy that doctors in general have completely ignored, you know, the vaccine injuries, and people who were trusting continue to take the vaccines and have basically kept accumulating these injuries in their body.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
So the cost to individuals and their families continues to stack up. You know, so we've had loss of jobs, lots of businesses went under during the whole pandemic. Now people are have these complex health issues that they've never had before. They've never had before in their family. It's not in the 70-year-old or 80-year-old who was, you know, exiting the planet. It's in the younger group. It's in the working age people who are supposed to be making money. And then there's that added complication of, you know, dad and mom aren't working because they're sick. Now you got kids that are not being parented or all kinds of problems themselves because they stayed home during the COVID shenanigan fest. They're not learning. They're not properly socialized. So there's this compounding generational issue that is way bigger than just that people took the shot. But that's the predominant thing that's on people's mind because there's so much sickness. And that's all that you can think about. When you're sick, that's the only thing you can think about. So your quality of life goes right down. And so we're in this state where it's not just one person in the family that's unwell or unhealthy or not able to show up. And with cognitive malfunction, you've got executive decision-making problems, impulse control problems. So people that were pretty, you know, stand up, normal, able to function in everyday life are not doing that. You know, so it's like, what is going on with my people? They're all of a sudden, everyone's acting all like completely different and unreliable. And there are some solutions for people to be able to take, but there's some real horror stories that are completely abnormal that people are grappling with, I think, that are so far out there that, you know, 3 or 4 years we wouldn't have contemplated that lots of women would be having all of these health issues. So can you maybe speak to that a little bit too? Because I think there's the physical horror of what's going on, but there's also the psychological horror of, you know, when you lose a loved one or they're really struggling with their health.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, the damage that these vaccines have caused, like you said, it is just incalculable at this point. Physical, psychological, you know, you could also talk about, you know, financial, the hit to the economy. I mean, Edward Dodd had talked about, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars in damages just from vaccine injuries, disabilities and deaths. So it's shocking. I tend to focus more recently on kids, high school kids, even elementary school kids who are being harmed by the vaccines. Of course, it's a tragedy when anyone is harmed by the vaccine. But, you know, I focused on the kids because in Canada, we've had too many kids were COVID-19 vaccinated, healthy kids, you know, kids 12 to 19, 80% of these kids in Canada have had two shots or more. Kids 5 to 11 years old, 50% of these kids in Canada have had two shots or more. And now kids are dying suddenly left and right. They're collapsing in the schools. I constantly see posts from parents talking about, you know, their son or daughter collapsing in school. There was one case where a boy just collapsed at the desk. So it's not even that they're playing basketball or they're collapsing at the track meet, which they are. They're now collapsing, just sitting at the desk. And all the schools are doing is they're installing defibrillators in the school, which is fine. You need defibrillators in the school, absolutely. But they're ignoring the underlying problem, which is that all of these kids are vaccinated. Many of them have been harmed very severely. And now these kids are just dropping. So I'm trying to bring this to people's attention. All of the sort of the high school kids that are collapsing, you know, all over the place. These stories are horrific. And these kids are having sudden cardiac arrests. They're having brain bleeds. They're having seizures. They're having aneurysms. All of these are side effects, well-known side effects of the COVID-19 vaccines. The vaccines damage the heart. They cause myocarditis. They cause blood clots. So you can get a blood clot in the heart, causing a heart attack. You know, you can get aneurysms because the vessels are being damaged by the spike protein. So that causes aneurysms, which are weaknesses in the blood vessels, which can then burst and you can get a brain bleed and die from that. Kids are coming down with seizure disorders that they've never had before. So all of these things are happening. They're happening at significantly increased rates. And I'm trying to, you know, make parents aware of these risks, because the politicians aren't doing it. The public health authorities aren't doing it. The doctors aren't doing it. They're just letting these kids die. They're letting these kids collapse. And they're trying to always sweep it under the rug and pretend it's not happening. you know, here in Canada, I've said these vaccines have to be stopped. These mRNA vaccines had to be stopped. They should have been stopped back in mid-2021 when it was clear from the Israeli data that the boosters failed in Israel. It was the first country to roll out booster shots. And very shortly after they rolled out their booster shots, they became the number one country in the world for rate of COVID-19 infections. And so it showed that the boosters were not working. In fact, people were more likely to get infected if they were vaccinated. So these vaccines should have been stopped back in mid-2021. And any doctor who's pushed mRNA vaccines, who may have been fooled initially, even I was fooled to some degree initially. I didn't realize these vaccines were going to be this bad. I didn't realize the side effect profile was going to be as bad as it's turned out to be. But any doctor pushing vaccines after mid-2021 is engaging in medical malpractice and is entirely incompetent. But, you know, we're in a situation where all the health authorities have approved it. So what do you do, right? And I think the first step that we can take, for example, in Alberta, is to ban these vaccines in all kids under 19 years old. You know, we can ban it. Start with that as the first step. Start investigating some of these sudden deaths or even some of these injuries. We know that Alberta Health Services is illegally blocking COVID vaccine injury reports that are being submitted by Alberta doctors. They're blocking them from being forwarded to Health Canada and investigated. So we know that this cover-up of COVID vaccine injuries and deaths is happening at the provincial level. And it's being done by managers, health managers and bureaucrats, many of them who are not doctors, but they're collecting $200,000-$300,000 salaries. Mm-hmm. They're illegally blocking these reports from being sent to Health Canada. And the politicians know this. You know, the Alberta premiers, Jason Kenney, knew this. Danielle Smith knows this. The health minister, Jason Copping, Tyler Shandro, the justice ministers, they know this is happening. But they're keeping their mouth shut because there's an election coming up and they all want to get reelected so they can have nice pensions. But they're allowing people to die in record numbers. And it's on their hands. So that's why I'm speaking up. That's why other doctors should be speaking up. Other healthcare professionals, parents need to start speaking up. You know, like some of the parents of these children who are dying, they're staying silent. They're not saying a word. And, you know, it's a tragedy that parents have to start speaking up collectively and put an end to this madness.
And so what do you think is the biggest reason why parents don't speak up?
Well, you know, I think a lot of parents believed and trusted the government officials and the public health authorities. You know, I come from a communist country, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you introduced me and my background, escaping communist Czechoslovakia through a United Nations refugee camp. So people from communist countries, you know, never trusted the government. We knew that the government was corrupt. They were liars. They lied about everything. The media lied about everything. We knew that. We grew up knowing that. We saw it every day in our mm-hmm. lives. So we come from the background of the government is lying until proven otherwise, right? Whereas in Canada and the United States, people come from the background of I trust the government. The government is telling me the truth and cares about me until proven otherwise. And I think a lot of people really misplaced their trust in people who are unbelievably corrupt. Most politicians are completely corrupt. Most healthcare officials are completely corrupt. These people, all they care about is about money and power and how to get rich in the positions that they're in. You know, at Alberta Health Services, we have 3,000 managers managing our healthcare system, and they all care about getting to the next level so they can make an extra $50,000 or $100,000 and get rich, rich in paper. But people trusted these officials, government and health officials. And I think, you know, if you've trusted these people, the idea that they lied to you and pushed a product on you and your kids that is potentially fatal is too much to, I think it's too much to bear, mm-hmm. right? Because then you'd have to accept that you put your life in the hands of people who probably want you dead. These people absolutely don't care about the people who are dying from the COVID-19 vaccines or who are being injured, right? Yeah. They absolutely don't care. They don't lose a minute of sleep over it. So, and if you put your trust in these people, you're going to be embarrassed that you were gullible and you were so trusting and naive. But also, you know, it's this cognitive dissonance. You almost don't want to believe that people could be this evil. that people in positions of power and care and responsibility could be this evil and would be willing to hurt people in the general population. I think most people can't wrap their head around it. People in communist countries can easily wrap their head around it. They've had their loved ones sent to the gulags in the middle of the night when the secret police knocked down the door and took away, uncle or aunt who was speaking up against the government and they were never heard from again. You know, we all experienced that in communism, right? Mm-hmm. People here in Canada and the United States have never experienced that. So they can't fathom that these government officials would wish harm on them.
And so once somebody does fathom and grasp that the government does wish harm on you, and this is not just in Canada, but lots of places in the world right now, what is the best course of action that a person can take? You know, we've talked here about leaving because it's so bad. Like I'm in Alberta, Canada too. But we've talked about actually going to another place because it's so awful here. And people are shocked that it's gone from being fairly reasonable here in Canada to being so bad that I'd be willing to leave. But we can't, you know, can we all leave or do we, you know, should a person stay and fight? You know, what's your thoughts on it? Is it a losing battle?
I don't think it's a losing battle. I mean, communism fell as well. You know, I mean, it took many years, but most of the communist countries fell. I think people need to stand up, push back, speak out, do it peacefully. I don't believe that violence is an answer to anything. Do it peacefully. And of course, there's going to be a lot of anger and people will have to figure out how to deal with that anger and not let it, you know, be a destructive force. You know, I'm speaking out. I'm doing it for my kids. You know, I want my kids to have a good future in Canada. And so I want this, you know, for other kids as well. Now, if it does come to the point where I see that Canada is not salvageable, that Alberta is not salvageable, that these countries are going down the path of communist hell or totalitarian hell, and there's no saving it, then I probably will take my family and leave. I mean, my family left the communist country for a better life. And, you know, if I have to do the same for my children, I'll do it. But I think, you know, I don't think we're at that point yet. I think people need to speak out because we need to bring an end to this healthcare catastrophe, which I think is the biggest catastrophe ever that we've seen come from, you know, the healthcare side. People need to push back in large numbers and speak out, find your voice, find your courage, because I think we can't turn this around. And I think we can put an end to pharmaceutical fraud here in Canada, United States, and so on. But people have to push back and find a way to keep speaking out until those big changes come. Because, you know, we may lose our country if we don't.
Mm-hmm. And if we lose ourselves in the process of losing the country, that's the things against your own physical wellness. Well-being. And so one of the things that was really revealing also for me was the number of side effects that Pfizer actually put out on their documents. And so do you have that number of whatever the side effects was? Because it was so, that was something that I had a hard time grasping just the sheer number of side effects, just to give it some context for people, because they might be just thinking, oh, myocarditis, okay, some brain stuff. But how many reported side effects were there from the Pfizer documents themselves?
I believe it was over 1,000. And I think it was 9 pages, very fine print, single spaced, that they had listed all the possible conditions that have arisen from these vaccines. No, the side effects are extremely serious. And they're not rare. They're actually quite common. It shocks me every time I write a Substack article about COVID vaccine side effects and injuries, and I go into the VAERS system or Eudra Vigilance or other reporting bodies, I'm always shocked at the sheer number of reports of side effects. You know, this is not, you know, one in a thousand, one in a million. You know, there are tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who are severely injured. And we know that most injuries don't get reported at all.
Yeah.
So, like I said, you know, I gave an estimate for the excess deaths, which was one in a thousand. The disabilities were one in a hundred. And just to finish, the rate of injuries from the vaccines is one in 10. 10% of people have been significantly injured by the vaccine to have required either hospitalization or seeking hospital care or medical attention of some kind. 10% of all vaccinated people. And if you consider that close to 90% of the population is vaccinated, these are huge numbers. These are really huge numbers.
Yes, staggering, and only to get worse potentially over time.
Yeah, we don't even know the long-term effects of this. You know, we're only 2 years in to the vaccine rollout. And so we're really, and I think people are shocked that, you know, some of the people who are coming down with injuries had their last dose a year ago. And they're thinking, well, if it was a year ago that I had my last dose, I should be fine by now. And yet they're coming down with heart injuries. They're coming down with neurological injuries. And so we're only starting to see the long-term effects.
It is tragic. And we're out of time for today, Dr. Makis, but I'd love to have you come back on, if you could, in the fairly near future, to talk about the mRNA vaccine continued rollout and what the plan is for this is not going to ever end. Unless we end it, because there's a plan for having rollouts of mRNA vaccines for as long as there's some humans alive on this planet. So, Dr. Makis, thanks again for being a wonderful guest. Please, everyone, get your RX, your own little list of things to take or to give to your family members to help them to be better. Love yourselves, love each other, mind your minds. That's all for us. Bye for now.
Thank you for being a part of our program today. Master Your Life is a presentation of Leah Mattinson Enterprises, Inc. Join us next time on Master Your Life, helping you to discover the very best of you.